of Fatherhood podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! Welcome to this episode of the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. So I was with my sons at a Mickey D's a couple of weeks ago, and I picked up my son, my oldest son, from school, and he usually likes to either go to the park or to go somewhere to eat. Now, typically, we go to this pizza place, this custom pizza place, but that day, that particular day that I picked him up, I decided, let's all go to Mickey D's, just us, the three guys, we're going to hang out. So it was me, my oldest son, Juki, and baby brother, Edie. When I pick him up from school, or at times when my wife picks him up from school, there's a nearby playground. And my wife has developed this practice of, if there are any of the high school students in the nearby school that are at the playground, she typically will go with them or maybe not go with them just because of the foul language. And sometimes, you know, those kids are doing some really shady things and she just does not want to expose him to just the language and to those things, because right now Juki is very curious and he's going to start asking questions, which there's nothing wrong with that. But she typically says, you know, I just don't want to have to deal with that and not have a good time and not allow him to have a good time because he's so concerned with whatever might be going on in the playground. And so I've adapted that myself. Whenever I go pick him up on Fridays in particular that he has early dismissal, if it's a good day out and the sun is out and it's warm and the playground is big kid free, so then we'll go and we'll hang out. And we've done that a couple of times and it's been incredible. It's been so much fun. We play on the swings. We go down the slides. We run around. We try every single toy or every single item in the playground. And it's been great. So this particular Friday, I have Juki and I also have Edie with me. And because I have Edie, the playground was just not a good idea. So I decided we're going to go to Mickey D's. And I live in a place where there are two nearby McDonald's, and I go to the one closest to where we live. And when I walk in, the Mickey D's is full. I mean, full of high school students and middle school students who have been let out early, and they're all packed up in the Mickey D's. And everyone is sort of at the table having their own conversations and what have you. And a couple of things. Number one, I realize, holy smokes, I am old as heck, because I'm looking at these kids and they all look like babies. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think it's been that long since I was in high school. And yes, it has been. It's been a while since I was in high school. So just that realization of just seeing how young these children look just made me have some existential moment of just thinking, good grief. I am not as young as I thought I was. And the other thing, which is the reason why I'm bringing this story up, is that here I am now with my sons, and I am having an interesting existential moment where I am appreciating my soon-to-be 4-year-old, my soon-to-be 1-year-old, as I'm watching sort of a snapshot of what several years down the line is going to look like, how they're going to look like several years down the line. And I started to panic, not because I don't expect my sons to grow, but I guess the reason why I was panicking is I'm watching and I'm kind of paying attention to some of the interactions around the table where we're sitting. And I'm watching some of the unruliness of these kids. And now, I don't mean to say unruly in that they were all in there just kind of being, you know, wild and crazy and whatnot. In fact, they were just being kids. They were kids being kids. But I'm also hyper aware that the way that children who are in school today, especially those age groups, the middle school, like late middle school, high school age, I don't know if, and I asked myself this question, and I asked my wife and my sister and, you know, people of my generation this question all the time. I'm like, we couldn't have been as unruly as these kids are, right? We couldn't have had as foul language as these kids have, right? And the fact of the matter is, probably, most likely, actually, it would be a more accurate answer. But for some reason, just sitting there with my kids and watching this tapestry of young men and young women in their late middle school, early high school, or probably late high school years as the backdrop, just had me thinking about, this is what my life is going to look like in several years. This is what my children are going to look like. Like, this is the environment that they're going to be in. And by environment, I mean, they're also going to be middle school age kids, and they're also going to be high school age kids. And so how are they going to be in public? What is going to be their disposition? What is going to be their demeanor? What part of their character is going to be in the forefront at that time? How ruly or unruly are they going to be? How out there or reserved are they going to be? Who's going to be their friends? Are they going to be hanging out at a Mickey D's when I thought they would be in school? Are they going to come home straight from school when there's an early dismissal? Just starting to ask all of these questions. Now, I'm asking these questions, not implying that the kids who were in the Mickey D's that day were doing anything wrong. Again, I want to drive that point home because I think it was an early dismissal day for them too. Nonetheless, just being in that environment, you know, seeing boys sitting at the same table with girls, and you can tell the boyfriend and girlfriends, you can tell the ones that have a lot of sexual tension between them. You can tell the ones who were kind of, you know, loners. You could tell who was just part of the group just because that's just a group of guys or a group of gals. I mean, just the whole tapestry. And I'm sitting there with my toddler and with my infant, and I'm probably one of the oldest people in there on that Friday, and hyper aware of how old I felt and I feel just now retelling the story, just hyper aware of the innocence of my kids and how we are trying to cultivate them at this phase of their lives right now. And it reminded me of a conversation that I was a part of earlier that same week in a men's group where one of my friends expressed somewhat of a similar sentiment. He talked about the way that he was brought up. It was to toughen him up and prepare him for a world that is tough and rough and dangerous. And so now that he is a father and he has a son and a daughter, he's noticing within himself that the way that he was brought up has created the second nature in him, whereby whenever his son does something that he feels is like he's not being tough enough, he instinctually responds in a way to toughen his son up. And he opened up. He was very vulnerable about this. And he opened up and he talked about the struggle that he has in learning how to respond to his son in a different way, in a way that is counter natural to him, that is against his nature based on how he was growing up. Now, this is no big surprise. We all are a product of the home that we were brought in, and the home that we were brought in has people or had people who influenced our lives, whether it be our parents, our biological parents, whether it be our adoptive parents, whether it were our foster parents, and whatever community that we came up in, we were influenced by the people that made up that community. Regardless of your community, whether it was a mostly positive one or a mostly negative one, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the people who form part of these communities, who formed these communities, were a mixed bag of people. There were some broken people, there were some well-rounded people, and there were some people anywhere in between that spectrum. But it got me to thinking about when I became a father for the first time in 2020, and I started to look at the world through the lens of now having a baby, a newborn. And honestly, that was the first time that I realized how scary the world looked, how big the world felt, how isolating it felt. And maybe the pandemic had something to do with it. I won't discredit that. But I think it was something more also, something existential. Just a new paradigm of seeing my reality. You know, being a bachelor, not having any ties or any commitment to someone to that degree, life was just simple. I would just do whatever I wanted to do, take whatever risks I wanted to take. I don't say that to say that I was living some type of extravagant lifestyle or some type of, you know, YOLO life. Not at all. But I did assume certain risks, and I was living in such a way that if something happened, it happened to me. And I was responsible for myself. Once I became a father, all of that changed, because now the better part of living was all wrapped up in this beautiful newborn who I would now be responsible for the rest of my life and his life. And so my decisions now were not just my decisions. The consequences were not just the consequences for me. Now those consequences and those decisions had implications for somebody else. And I remember just feeling how scared I was to be raising a child in the environment that he was born in at the time that he was born in. And it all became very scary to me, to the point that at one occasion, one morning, while I was having a really tough time just coping and navigating through all of these thoughts, that I broke down crying as I was holding my son. And I apologized to him for his existence. And I was telling him how sorry I was that I brought him into this world. And I was telling him how sorry I was already anticipating a time where, if God forbid, something happened to me, that he would grow up in a world without knowing who I was. And I apologized to him for, God forbid, he would be the victim of some sinister thing that would happen to him, thereby cutting his days short in the world. And I apologized to my son for everything. I mean, I was sobbing from my core, apologizing to him, because I was scared. And part of me continues to feel that fear maybe not as intensely, and maybe not for the same reasons. Although I don't think I could ever divorce myself from some of those reasons. But part of me continues to feel that fear. Would I be able to protect him? Would I be able to give him all of the tools, all of the instructions? Would I be able to mold him in such a way that he would grow tough skin to be able to undergo and overcome the harshness and the harsh environment, the unforgiving environment of life, bullying and racism and classism and all the other isms? Would I be able to cultivate in him an attitude, a character traits that will allow him to overcome any of those abusive tenets of his environment and his society? And also cultivate in him an appreciation for, almost an anticipation for, the beautiful things and the beautiful people who he will meet and the beautiful things that he will experience in life as well. And for him to truly believe in himself that he is capable of doing anything and everything that he wants to do, and to be realistic, not in some fable fairy tale type stuff, but to be realistic, to be both humble, but also to be decisive, to be sharp, to stand on all 10 toes and to not be pushed around. Would I be able to give him the instructions, the education, the experiences that he needs, and prepare him for this world that is so cruel, that is so unforgiving, that is so violent, that is so careless of who or what or bank accounts or education or any of that? Everyone is his victim, regardless of where you fall in society. Would I be able to do that for him? And now that he has a little brother and that I have another son, would I be able to do that for both of them? Just thinking about my friend expressing that led me back to that place back in 2020, thinking about those questions, entertaining, feeling overwhelmed by those questions. And I remember having conversations with another friend of mine in a different forum, in a different setting. And at many times over the past year or so that I've known him, a shout out to my man JK, I expressed this very same sentiment, this fear. And he said something that has been so helpful to me, and I hope it can be helpful to you as well. He shared with me a bit of wisdom from his experience with his father and the way that his father handled this dynamic with him. It's important to say that I think as fathers, we all have some version of this anxiety. We all have some version of this fear as we look out at the world through the lens and the innocence of our children. And we start asking ourselves these questions either consciously or subconsciously. I think it's part of the experience of being fathers. I think it's part of the experience of loving our children. I think it's part of the experience of wanting better for our children. And it is something that I believe we all go through in some way, shape, or form along our journey of fatherhood. So if you find yourself struggling through this phase and struggling through these questions, it's not because you're freaking out. It's not because you're losing your mind. It's not because of any of that. Rather, I think it's because deep down inside, you want the best for your children. You want the best for your child. You want your child to succeed. You want what is good for your kids, and you are in search of the good life. And the good life looks different for all of us, but fundamentally, we are all in search for the good life for ourselves, for our children in particular. And we would be foolish, I believe, to not contemplate and to see all of the red flags and how we and the generations before us have made a mess of this place, of our world, of our climate, of our politics, of our human relationships, of everything, of our families, of our education system, of our financial structures. We've made a mess of everything. And if your experience is anything like mine, when I saw both of my children realizing that everything good that there is in the world is bound up in these little human people, I think we would be foolish to not feel some level of high alert, high anxiety, some level of fear, wondering, are they going to make it? Is what I'm doing and what I will do going to be enough? And I also think part of what's happening too is that, at least for me, the moment that I witnessed my sons, is the moment that I began to turn towards the mirror of my mortality. The moment I became a father, there was this awareness that my time is not that long. Now, I don't know what long is, and I don't know what your definition, I have no idea, but just seeing my children when they were first born was the beginning of this dance with my mortality. Okay, there will come a day when I'm not here and I will leave them behind. That would be the ideal way of things. The most ideal would be that neither of us have to die. Nevertheless, we don't live in that type of world. Because of the world that we live in, one of us is going to die. And my sincere prayer, I will open up and be very transparent with all of you at this very moment. My sincere prayer, this is a prayer that I actually pray, and these are the words that I actually say, is, Lord, allow my children to send me to my grave with a full head of gray. I want to see my sons become men, become husbands, become fathers, become successful, and for them to be the one to bury me and not for me to be the ones to bury them. Now, I know that's going to cause them pain also, but in this iteration of life, man, this is how it must be. This is how I would love for it to be. Allow both of my sons to send me to my grave with a full head of grays. Amen. So I think that's also part of what's going on when we start asking these existential questions, when we start seeing the world in this light. And if that's not your experience, I'll be curious to hear what your experience has been and how you describe it. So feel free to send me an email to reach out, WTFatherhoodPodcast@gmail.com, or Welcome to Fatherhood Pod on Instagram. Message me and let me know, what has your experience been? What questions have you wrestled with? What questions have you been asking yourself? Have you had this moment of crisis and existentialism where you're asking and you're seeing the world through this paradigm that is kind of scary? And what do you make of it? How have you wrestled through it? Where are you now? Have you come to a place of being settled? Where are you? WTFatherhoodPodcast@gmail.com or Welcome to Fatherhood Pod on Instagram. So this is the story that my friend shared about how his father handled this phase of the fatherhood journey. Whenever he went to his dad and presented his dad with something that was going on in his personal life or something that he was wrestling with, some question that he had, some major life thing or some life thing, it didn't have to be major necessarily. because of his father's great sense of self-awareness, his father will speak from his experience. And what I found very helpful was the way that his father shared his experiences with him, his son. And he shared his experiences in a way to help him understand the reasons why he felt the way he felt, the reasons why he thought the way he thought, the reasons why he was giving the recommendations that he was giving, the reasons why certain things were triggering for him, and the reasons why certain things weren't as... So his father was able to bring him into his own world so that he can see and understand from his father's perspective why his father was advising him, counseling him, giving him whatever wisdom he would give him. But then the father was very careful to also say, these are my reasons. And so I need you, or I want you to understand where I'm coming from. So the way that makes sense in my mind is his dad sort of giving him a comprehensive history lesson from his own perspective and his own lived experiences, and then putting that on the table and trusting that everything that his son would then need to learn and to know how to figure out and navigate whatever obstacle he is dealing with at the moment, that this story, this little history tour from his father's perspective, that he would find everything that he need in that. And of course, that dad would always be there to elaborate and to expand and to explore whatever else needed to be explored. And it wasn't so much of a, I am imposing this on you, as much as it was, this is my lived experience. And I'm putting it right here on the table. I'm giving you as much context as necessary for the issues that you're bringing up, and take it, explore it, and I trust you to learn and to figure out and to know how to then use this and navigate your own circumstance. And there were many times that my friend JK brought this point about in conversations that we've had. And maybe about the third or fourth time, I truly began to appreciate that approach and that perspective. And it seemed to have helped me calm my anxieties and my worries and my fears. It didn't dispel them in any way, shape, or form. They're still there. But just learning how to see things from that perspective has been truly helpful in helping me frame in my mind how then I want to proceed when I get to those conversations and to that phase of my relationship with my sons. In fact, even beginning now, what I love about this approach is there has to be, this doesn't work if there isn't trust, number one. Number two, it doesn't work if, as a father, he didn't know his son. And so I guess that also falls into the trust category. And number three, it wouldn't work if his son, my friend, didn't trust his father. So all three of these points truly are all the same. It's all about trust. If the environment is not based on trust, then this approach doesn't work, cannot work, will not work. And the trust is mutual. The trust is that my friend would talk to his father, but then on my end now as a father, on his end as his father, he trusted that his son would know what to do. And whatever decisions that his son did, there would be this level of trust. Now, I don't know to what degree, right? Because I know that there are situations where as the parent, you sort of convey that you trust your child, but really deep down inside, you want them to do exactly what you want them to do. And I don't think that can work either if that's the case. And trust me, listen, I have personal experience with that, both as a father myself and being the one who's being parented. The parent says something, and you think that there is this trust there. And ultimately, it's revealed that, oh, no, you wanted me to do what you wanted me to do the whole time. And then the whole thing falls apart. But in order for this to work, that fundamental trust has to be established, particularly from the side of the parent to the child. And that comes over time. That comes with experiences. That comes with doing everything that we must do within our power right now, especially me as having two young children, within my power right now to cultivate this environment of trust from me to my son and from my son towards me. So this perspective has been so helpful and useful in helping me frame my mentality. And just thinking back on what my friend was conveying, my other friend was conveying in the men's group, I empathize so deeply with what he's wrestling with. This second nature that's really our nature, or his nature in his case, and my nature in my case, to respond in ways that are true to how we were parented. And I think what's important to realize is that the world that our children will inherit is not fully formed yet, because they haven't gotten there yet. It's being formed and created right now. And because I am alive right now, because he is alive right now, because we are alive right now, and we are participants in the shaping of this world, we do have some level of say and influence in how the world that we are going to pass down to our children is. And we don't know how all of the different things are going to manifest. At least I don't have that power. What I do know, and what I do have a greater level of control over, is pouring into my children right here, right now, intentionally, with purpose, moment by moment, to the best of my abilities. And I'm not talking about getting it right all the time, because listen, we are tired, things happen, we are a mixed bag ourselves. But what I am saying is that perhaps I need to begin incorporating a higher level of intentionality, a higher level of purpose. Perhaps I need to begin defining clear expectations and goals for how I want to begin planting those seeds into my children presently. Building that environment of trust where they trust me, where I genuinely trust them, because those are the things that I do have control over. So what I do have control over is what my actions are now. And many times I think, as parents, because of the flow of life, because of the ebb and flow of our day-to-day and our responsibilities and our duties and our personal issues and all sorts of things, we lose a certain level of purposefulness and intentionality in what we are doing with our families, particularly us as fathers with our children. And I think it has to shift, at least for me, from how can I prepare them for a world that has not fully been materialized yet, right? For a future that hasn't, it's so far away in the distance. I have no idea. I have no power. I have no control over the components of that future. I have some influence. I have a small part to play, but I don't have full control over what that future is going to look like, because I just don't. What I can more easily influence and what I can more easily shape and mold and impact are my children and the environment that I create for them now. So how do I instill resilience in them so that when they get to that future that is so distant and scary and far away, they have a basic, fundamental level of resilience in their characters that can help them face whatever obstacles they encounter in a future life? How can I instill in them discipline now? How can I instill in them a sense of worth? How can I instill in them a sense of security? How can I help them currently feel comfortable in their own skin? How can I instill in them emotional intelligence? How can I instill in them empathy? How can I instill in them the ability of critical thinking? How can I instill in them these core, abstract, but very useful values? How can I shape their value system in such a way that they will take these things and take it to new heights and new levels and apply them in whatever circumstances they may find themselves? And it all starts with the day-to-day in the home, how I talk to my sons, how I respond to their shenanigans, the words that I choose to say to them, the ways that I wake them up in the morning, the ways that I send them to sleep at night, the example that I set in the home myself, the example that I set with their mother, the examples that I set with how I engage and interact with people, trusting them, truly trusting them, humbling myself when I'm wrong. It's all of these things. And the experience of time watching my sons grow is, it's so crazy because they're growing up and they're growing up very fast. And again, I'm not going to get it right all the time. In fact, I think that I end up failing most times or more times than I care to admit. And I think the reason why I feel that way is because I too have lost a sense of intentionality and a sense of purpose in the time that I'm spending with them now. So I don't know if this is where you are. I don't know if any of this resonates with you. I don't know if this is part of your experience. I do want to encourage you to consider that if you are there, if you are thinking about what this distant future may be, and if you have this level of anxiety and you feel like you're in a moment of crisis, I would invite you to not suppress that. But I am inviting you into considering a different perspective, to consider a different paradigm, to consider that in order for you to feel most confident about that distant future, you actually have the ability to do something in the here, in the now, in the present. And so examine what you're doing and how you're doing it now and make the necessary adjustments that you need to make. If the perspective that my friend JK shared and that I've reiterated is helpful to you, then begin practicing that now. How can you identify the important components of the story of your life and shape that in a way to invite your children into conversation with you, delivering this story in a way that responds to the obstacles and the challenges and the questions that they bring to you, providing the wisdom that you want to provide, not necessarily giving directions and instructions and yes and no the whole time. Listen, it's a combination of both. I'm not advocating for story time all the time, and I'm also not advocating for drill sergeant all the time. What I am saying is using wisdom and discernment to know how to navigate these different scenarios and circumstances, and then trusting that you have done the necessary work, beginning with yourself. You have done the necessary work in improving and healing areas and aspects of your life, your heart, your story that need to be reconciled, so that you can talk about the work that you've done, and you can talk about why you did or you didn't, and you can present a more holistic story, an approach, an example for your kids to follow. I don't know if this makes sense to you, It certainly makes sense to me. I want to hear what your thoughts are. WTFatherhoodPodcast@gmail.com. Welcome to Fatherhood Pod on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation, and I look forward to hearing from you the next time.